Welcome to the new reality edition of Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, where we serve you the first bite of today's science, technology, and innovation. I'm Bert Lam, and on today's show, we have Steve Hsu. He's a writer, producer, and director of the educational documentary of the 100th Battalion, and I have him on the show here, live in the studio. Hey, Steve, welcome to Bite Marks Cafe.
Hey, Bert, how's it?
It's good to have a live person in the studio, so this is going to be a special one. Now, I know that you are quite famous for the Shaka film, and you've got some announcements about that coming up.
Yeah, pretty stoked that on January 16th, it's a Friday, Shaka goes to streaming. So it got bought, and it's going to Apple TV, Amazon Prime, YouTube. It's just amazing where it's going, Hulu and
so when Tubi. When you say it gets bought, did you do you get some kind of like a royalty or residuals per viewing or whatever?
Yeah, we got a very favorable split. So the distribution companies negotiate with you depending upon how much they like it and do they think it's going to make money. If it's going to make a lot of money, they'll give you a better percentage. And we got a very healthy percentage, and then we pay a certain percentage of what we make to our agent. And of course, we're a nonprofit, right? So we did a lot of this with some grant money, with donations. We don't have investors that are looking over our shoulder and expecting us to make money. So anything we get back, in a sense, is a grace. And we apply that to the next film. So that's a real positive for the community. Because, you know, we're basically about telling stories of the Aloha spirit because we want to make our community and the world a better place. We want people to learn by the tool of Aloha.
Well, you know, you've done a really great job not only producing the film, but you also did a lot of the support infrastructure to the extent of actually passing a bill where the Shaka is Hawaii's sort of legitimate, what do they call it? It's a gesture.
The first state gesture of any state in the union.
And I think I saw Senator Wakai make a mention of that recently.
Senator Wakai is a really good buddy of mine, and he's the guy that actually said, I can help you with that. And so he taught me how to write a bill. So we write this bill, he presents it on the floor, and it got passed the first year. That's a real rarity. He'll tell you that 7% of bills pass every year, and most bills take 2 to 3 years minimum to get passed. So to pass something in a single year with a unanimous vote, I mean, obviously we're not asking for money. You know, we're only asking for this sort of ceremonial, like, this is our thing. And why wouldn't anybody support that? You'd be nuts not to support it. It is a Hawaii asset, and it should be inured to the benefit of the business and the people of Hawaii.
You know, I'll have you join that exclusive club of passing a bill in 1 year, because I did that, too, with the Hawaii Open Data Bill.
Right on. You're my man.
And Senator Wakai was the guy that helped
same
introduce
guy,
it. Now, he didn't say he'd write it for me, so I had to kind of...
No, he didn't write it. He gave me a template.
Yeah.
He said, this is how bills look like. And so he said, in our case, he said, I cannot write this because if I write it, I'll be lambasted as I'm wasting public time. Because there's more important things like houselessness and, you know, food stamps, whatever, right? So he said, if you write it, I'll present it, but you have to bird dog it. And so I went to every single committee meeting, did all the testimony. You know, it's literally like running a political campaign.
Yep. No, I
you
hear
know
you.
It.
I hear you.
We both got scars there, right?
I empathize, No, but it was a great, great experience. And I appreciate the fact that, you know, Senator Wakai was one of those guys that really kind of ushered, you know, and pushed you along to do that.
He is
so that's
a stand up guy.
Now, you have the, you know, sort of like the reputation of producing Shaka film, and it is very much about Aloha. And you now are like kind of like Mr. Aloha. Now, how did you go from Mr. Aloha to now, you know, the 100 Battalion World War II movie?
Pretty much kicking and screaming, like a POW. I did not want to do the what I called the 100th picture. But there was a gentleman in the Shaka film, Wally Camp, who's a Vietnam veteran, and he bugged me for like a year. He says, Steve, you got to do this movie. The 100th has never really been told properly. And in a lot of ways, the 442, you know, bless their heart, they did a great job. But a lot of the credit that they kind of are given emanates from the 100th. In fact, they wouldn't have existed if it wasn't for the 100th being so good before them. The 100th was in Italy for 10 months before the 442 ever is brought over there. And so when you hear the Purple Heart Battalion designation, that was something that was bestowed on the 100th in Monte Cassino, Italy, months before the 442 even landed.
Mm-hmm.
And but eventually they all kind of get known because the two units get combined later in the war.
Oh, so they actually did kind of combine. So they merged.
Yeah.
And that's why you really don't, I mean, there's a distinctive time frame for
correct.
The 100.
Yeah.
And then when the 442 comes in.
So
then,
I've never been a military history buff, right? And this is like a big stretch for
right.
me. I had to learn a crap ton to do this picture.
Right, right.
But one thing I learned was that when you work with military folks, they're super specific about acronyms and credentials and all the, you know, dates and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the 100th Infantry Battalion is known as separate before 442 is joined with them. And the reason is that they stood on their own. And to them, it's a super important point of honor that they're out there by themselves, really cutting trail.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys were super warriors. There's no question. They had been through four training cycles before going to Italy because the government essentially had them on ice. They're, you know, we don't know what to do with these guys. We can't put them in Pacific theater because we don't know who to shoot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so eventually they send them to Italy. But even before they send them, they realize that in the third training cycle, these guys are such super warriors and such good attitude that we need more of these. So that's when the call goes out for the volunteers for the 442.
Now, when you were sort of asked and convinced and what took a year to actually convince you, at the point in time when you were convinced, now you're probably thinking, I gotta raise money. I mean, you're convincing me, but are you giving me money? I mean, what was it that was going through your mind to actually figure out how to finance this?
Well, so the first point of order is that I don't think money first. I think importance to community and story first. Ololo is the most important
mm-hmm,
thing
mm-hmm.
and how that impacts the community. So when I finally kind of got that, yeah, this is a really important story, I was thinking, well, who can I find to give to these guys that person can tell a story? Money has not been a problem for us because, as you know, we did a Shaka license plate.
Mm-hmm.
So that license plate is a nonprofit
exactly.
license plate. There's 15 of them in this state. As a nonprofit, we get $20 per year for each license plate that is registered as a Shaka license plate.
Mm-hmm.
And that money we apply to the films. So we're not, if people go, why are there so many potholes when you guys are getting all this money for these plates? Well, no, that's not our job. That's the city's job.
Mm-hmm.
Our job is to do things for the community like we chose to make movies. So that $20 every year goes to this fund for making films now.
That wasn't enough to do the 100th, right?
I mean, yeah,
so it still had to.
It's about 20% of the 100th budget.
Mm-hmm.
All that said, though, military films are pretty easy to fund if you're doing it right, because there's a lot of wealthy veterans. There's a lot of wealthy veteran sons and daughters groups. I mean, for example, the first group that stood up, Kathy Hayashi, president of the 100th Infantry Battalion Veterans, she stood up right away. She says, this film, and in fact, I would not be doing this film if it wasn't for her, because
mm-hmm.
I knew I needed her cover to be both be kind of the military historian side and also to keep me straight. Like, I've passed everything by her and her historians in that organization. And so the first thing they did, which was like amazing to me, is they gave us $25,000
mm-hmm.
to start the picture.
Now you said that you consider doing military films relatively easy. So I do want to unpack that a little bit and tell me about, you know, what you, as a filmmaker, what was it, what are the elements of a military film that's easy? Okay, so we'll hold that thought. We'll be right back in a short break to continue our conversation with Steve Hsu, writer, producer, and director of the educational documentary, The 100th Battalion. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor PCAT, Pacific Center for Advanced Technology Training.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR1. I'm Bert Lum, and if you're just joining us, we're talking to Steve Hsu. He's the writer, producer, and director of the educational documentary that's coming out called The 100th Battalion. And, of course, right before the break, Steve was sort of saying, oh, yeah, you know, military films are pretty easy to do from a funding standpoint. But, Steve, I mean, what is it about military films that are easier? Maybe it's because the plot line is pretty straightforward, but you're telling the story. So there's a lot of stories to tell. What is it that you consider to be the easy part?
Okay, so I obviously misstate myself.
Okay, No, this is the opportunity to correct.
Okay. There's nothing easy about making an independent film.
Right,
including funding. But what I meant to intimate is that it was easy for us to get the first round started.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if you get the first round, then you know you can actually at least do something. And the more sophisticated your picture gets, the more resources you need. But I've always been one that I can scale it over time. If I prove, it's much like in entrepreneurship. You do your first tranche, you prove yourself, you get the second funding level. It's like that. So I'm used to that kind of entrepreneurial proof point mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that if I get something started and it's a good storyline, the people that would be invested in it will be like, yeah, I want to help with that. And this particular story, there's a lot of support for it, not just because it's a military history story, because there are a lot of military buffs and a lot of people that, you know, really honor the service of what people that came before them have done to create our world today. But also, it's an AJA story.
Mm-hmm.
Americans of Japanese ancestry, you know, they're the plurality of this population in Hawaii. Even to today.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's just a lot of people that want to understand that history. How did that all happen and what does it mean for the future? So ultimately, you know, if I don't raise the rest of the money, and we're about a third of the way raised. Okay, so it's not easy. If we don't raise it, I have money to fall back on to some degree for a license plate program that aggregates over time, mm-hmm. keeps coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And worst comes to worst, I throw in my own money. Which is what I did for the Shaka film,
mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
I'm retired. I don't have to do things, you know. I don't have a regular job like people. I'm just like twiddling my thumbs, waiting for the sun to go up and go down. So ultimately, I just want to participate in a meaningful way with the time that I have left on the planet, and it's pure fun for me. I mean, you know, some people spend their money on golf clubs. Or cruises. I spend my money on making films if I have to. And if I don't, it's all that much better. And I think that in the long run, I have to make it so that it's self-sustaining. It doesn't rely on Steve's and Karen's nickels, my wife.
Mm-hmm.
It's really more that it's self-propelling program that then we can bring in other filmmakers and it goes beyond Steve's time on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really my goal, is how do we create an independent film community here that will tell redeeming responsible stories that elevate not just Hawaii, but the world. Because Hawaii really does. It's like Antipilaki Paki's thing,
mm-hmm.
right? We have the secret to peace.
Mm-hmm.
It's aloha. So why wouldn't the rest of the world want that? And if I put that in the tool of film or a gesture like the Shaka, there's nothing better I can do for the planet.
Now, you've been successful at weaving the concept of aloha, obviously through the Shaka film. Were you also able to do that with the 100 Battalion?
100%. In fact, that's the only reason why I'm doing the picture is when I was first approached about the picture, I said, I don't want to do like pyro. I don't want to do a Me Too Saving Private Ryan. It's just not me, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't like horror films. I don't really like thrillers that much. I'm more of a like, I guess a romantic person or whatever. But so my stipulation was that if I wrote a treatment, a summary for what I would do, and you guys accept it, I'll do it. Otherwise, I'll pass it on to somebody else. So the treatment I wrote is a picture called The 100th Seeds of Aloha. And
mm-hmm.
and the concept is these guys did amazing feats of aloha during the course of the war, on the field of battle for the civilians, and then for the 80 years following. They rebuilt the world with aloha. And there's countless examples of, you know, pigs from the sea helping Okinawa get pigs again, Christmas parties for orphans in the south of France when they could be partying it up with dancing girls. And I mean, these guys are just star human beings. And through this project, I've come away with a really great appreciation and understanding for what the Nisei soldiers did for this entire world. Like, we go all over Europe. We took a 2,000-mile trip through Europe this past 2 months, 3 weeks, Italy, France, Germany, Austria, back to Italy. And it was stunning to me how people there are reliving the war like it was yesterday. This is 80 years ago, the war, right? The incursion was a long time ago. For them, it's like yesterday because they live on a battlefield. And they know that they would have been living under a swastika
mm-hmm.
if the Allies had not come. And they all have lived through generations now of their lineages being exterminated by the other forces.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just amazing to see the gratitude. You know, America's very sort of disenfranchised from World War II because it didn't really happen on this soil so much. It mm-hmm. happened away. So it's easy for us to kind of like sweep it under the carpet. It's done. Let's go on, you know, next war, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they have a just amazing sense of gratitude for mm-hmm. what the Nisei did. And so that's part of what I want to capture in the picture, because ultimately I think that we need to have this healing moment after COVID, after acidic politics over the last 10 years. You know, we're not partisan in anything we do because we're a nonprofit. I'm not going to vote for the, you know, Republicans or the Dems. That's not my thing. But I will say that I think I can create a product that will bring both sides together, that will choose to live together in kindness and humanness and love, because ultimately that's what paradise is. It's connection with people. And it's just simply like, you know, live from the heart. You can create your bubble of paradise around you. It's your choice. So why don't we choose that?
You know, what you're describing too is a great kind of example of what folks like Nainoa Thompson does with, mm. you know, the voyages of Hokulea, going around the world, you know, yeah. spreading aloha. And you're basically doing this via film. Now, when you planned your trip to Europe, did you have the stories in mind? Did you pretty much have it
100%
mapped out
yeah.
as to the, you know, how it fed the seeds of aloha storyline?
Yeah, literally mapped out. So my first shot was, I needed to get this done fast because all the generals I'm working with, they're like, Steve, you need to get this picture done now because 4th of July next year is America's 250th year anniversary.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I had actually started this project in March of last year. So our goal is to finish it in 11 months. That's very fast for a feature documentary mm-hmm. at the level that we're doing it. This is a very cinematic, really polished piece with, you know, custom music, everything. So so I decided I would do this shot at Pearl Harbor Aviation Museum. They donated their Hangar 79, which is it still has the bullet holes from World War II in mm-hmm. it from the Japanese Zero shooting it. So this is ground zero at Pearl Harbor attack. I build this 6,000-square-foot map of Italy, France, and Germany with the battle route on it.
Mm-hmm.
And we invited sons and daughters to come and put medallions on this map for their past loved ones. 1,200 people show up from all across the country. And that day, we set up an interview booth and captured mm-hmm. 27 key interviews in one day. That's how you get a picture done fast.
Wow,
and on budget, right? Yeah. Under budget.
Yeah.
And so once I did that, I basically did all my selects from that content. So we knew exactly what the storyline was that we wanted to capture, including the fluff pieces. You know, then so the fluff pieces are more like, what are the aloha attributes that these guys showed? So we knew like 10 key stories that we were going to follow that we would eventually get the reaction shots from Europe for mm-hmm. the same stories. And so when we go to Europe, then we had literally the whole lineage of story laid out in 180 bites to the story.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we go there, I'd even pre-written my question sets for interviews on specific people that would match that 180 beat story.
Now, when you write the questions, did you prepare the response, or did you pretty much leave it to the people that are getting interviewed for them to provide you with their live response? And that's what you incorporated into the film.
Yeah, no, we want their live response. Mm-hmm. We don't want to mm-hmm. color their response mm-hmm. For two reasons. One is we don't want to put words in their mouth. We want it completely legit. My job is not to be judge and jury and make up something. My job is to present the truth, the factual evidence of what is there. And in some cases, as a documentarian, you might present multiple theories. Like that's what we did in Shaka film, is it's a whodunit. We're going backwards in time to show you alternatives and, you know, explanations, and then the audience can decide for themselves. So I kind of like that pathway where I'm not the judge. And in terms of, what content we get, oftentimes people give you zingers that are like, that's crazy. Like, you can't make this stuff up, and it's so good. So if you try to seed them too much,
you miss
the
best
stuff.
Now, would you be willing to give us a little sample of that kind of zinger story?
Yeah.
before the release of the film. So, okay, so if are, I'm going to hold that thought. We'll be right back at this short break to continue our conversation with Steve Hsu. He's a writer, producer, and director of the educational documentary, The 100th Battalion, Seeds of Aloha. This is Bite Marks Cafe. Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR1. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Steve Hsu. He's the writer, producer, and director of the documentary that's soon to be released, The 100th Battalion, Seeds of Aloha. And of course, right before the break, Steve, you were telling me that you did a very sort of systematic method, a method of getting stories. And in the process of actually getting the story told, you went out and interviewed a bunch of people, and you said you had some pretty good, you know, good stories that were told. And you said, you know, it's kind of a zinger. So can you share with us, like, example of that? So it'll tease the desire to want to actually see the movie.
Yeah, of course. So I had become aware of this story of this ring from Farrington High School that was found in the Vosges Forest. Mm-hmm. So it's found by a guy named Sebastian Rohr, who's become a good friend now. Sebastian finds this ring 3 years ago. It's Farrington High School, has an inscription on the inside, R. Kuroda. So he gets on the internet, finds the family, eventually contacts the family in Hawaii. And the grand nephew of R. Kuroda eventually calls him back. But he's thinking he's getting punked. He's like, this is not for real.
Right.
But eventually he realizes, no, this is actually real. So he flies to France and receives the ring on the site where it was found. And it's pretty chicken skin moment, I can tell you, because I've been on that site. When we went there in November of this past year, I stood on that same site with Sebastian. He showed exactly where we got it. And my still shooter, Cliff Kimura, who's been shooting my stuff for, I don't know, like 15 years now, great photographer. He shoots this image of this, and it literally looks like Lord of the Rings. It's so green, it's so lush, and it's very damp sound because everything's mossy, and just very surreal. You know, fall colors, and I'm wearing this like orange parka, which matches the fall colors. That was my choice, and that was a good choice. I know when you see the film, you'll be like, oh, that was really good. Production design counts, right? But so we're standing on the site. We get the picture. That's become our poster. So that's, if you look at the movie poster, we use that shot. And so if you know the backstory of it, it's super chicken skin. So then a month later, I'm back at home at Fort DeRussy interviewing General Susie Varas Lum, who runs the Daniel K. Noye Center for Security Studies. And we're walking outside of that. It's right by Halekoa Hotel, and there's a big grass field in the middle.
Right.
And she goes, you know this field, right? I go, I don't know, Kuroda Field? And I go, oh. That's Robert Kuroda? Yeah. He's one of the most decorated military veterans. And if you actually go to the military museum, which I also shot in just recently, they've had this whole huge placard of him there, right? So he's one of the top, like, decorated soldiers from that unit. And it's like, it's just
Did
chicken
she,
skin.
She
moment.
Know the story? You told her the story already?
She knows the story.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, but, you know, it's just, she didn't know the whole story. She didn't know about Sebastian. She just kind of heard about that roughly. But for us to bring that to light with all the pieces of the puzzle and tie it all together, then the symmetries are just unbelievable. I mean, you know, like another example is we go to Italy and I get this call from our guide, and she says, well, the town of San Terenzo wants to know if you're going to be around their area. Would you drop by and shoot your film there? I mean, yeah, sure. What are they thinking? Well, that's the location where Dan Inouye lost his arm. And I'm like, what? And so like they said, well, we want to dedicate our town square to him. And so I was like, well, sure. And we look at our calendar. It ends up being the very last day of our tour. And it becomes such a big moment that this whole other shadow tour of people from Hawaii want to be there. So our 12-person crew is there. But then we had a whole nother 12-person team that came on as that shadow tour. So it's a little tiny town, way high mountains above Carrara, Italy. And it was just the most special moment where everybody just came together and you realize that, in fact, we were in south of Italy, and this this one guy, he's telling us that there were so many battles here, and we have so many chapters in this book of war history that are all just bad, bad stories, bad mm-hmm. history. But we're writing the last chapter today, and that's you and I are here to meet each other and become a new family. And I said, of course, that's Ohana. And, you know, they're 12 hours on the other side of the clock.
Mm-hmm.
So for us to have all of that negative history that leads up to this positive moment of aloha mm-hmm. and Ohana building.
Yeah, it's seeds of aloha, right?
Yeah, seeds of aloha.
That's great. Now, you know, with the finding of the ring, was that just a happenstance? Was there a reason for the ring to actually be there?
He was looking for the ring. He was looking for stuff, right? There's all sorts of people there that have metal detectors, and they go in the woods, and almost like you point a metal detector any direction,
you'll find something.
And there's artifacts.
Yeah,
because the whole place is literally littered with war paraphernalia, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know, from boxes of unexploded grenades mm-hmm. to shells of this or that and helmets and all this kind of stuff, and, you know, shrapnels everywhere, right? So they're looking for these artifacts, and they have lots of museums there with plenty of that stuff in it. But it just was something he was doing. But this particular guy, Sebastian, feels that these type of artifacts need to find their way back to the lineage and the mm-hmm, families. And mm-hmm. so there's the great sense of honor among the people there that they want to actually return things and connect. And, you know, in the cemeteries where military servicemen are still interned, so they have an election to stay in Europe or come back, right? The ones that stay there, they are actually cared for. Their graves are cared for by local civilian families, which is amazing.
So, you know, I'm really excited about seeing the film. You're in production. I mean, you're pretty much in post-production now.
We're right? in post, yeah.
So when is the actual release of the movie?
Well, so ideally, we're finished with it in April, early April, late March. That's our goal. We know that there's a big demand for it January 4th. In fact, we're meeting with Mayor Blanchi already next week, and we've already met with the military people that would be the sort of the big cheeses in what would happen on the 4th. They've got the jet planes requisitioned already, so they can do the flyover, but they don't know what else they're going to do at this point. So we're basically
trying to... The 4th of July.
Yeah, okay. So so there's a lot of foot, but I think that ultimately our goal is that date, July 4th, for big rollout. And there's been talk about, well, would you go to Washington? I'm kind of like, nah, I kind of want to do something big in Hawaii.
Yeah,
they can watch from Washington.
Okay, where can people find out, you know, the saga of the 100 Battalion... Seeds of Aloha film?
100thfilm.com, okay. Simple as that.
Very good. I'm going to put that up on our show notes. And Steve, it's just really great to have you back. Steve Hsu is the writer, producer, and director of the educational documentary of the 100 Battalion, the Purple Heart Battalion, and it's called The Seeds of Aloha. Hey, Steve.
Bert.
Thanks for joining me in the studio today.
Aloha.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll talk about the upcoming Entrepreneurial Awards. If you miss any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. Our engineer is David Chong. You can catch us on HPR One every Friday or anytime via the HP app or your favorite podcast application. Hey, in the meantime, you all stay safe. You stay awesome. We'll see you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.